What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. Is getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine. And I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the audio podcast that looks at the future and says, well, we know where we're going, but we don't know where we've been. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Volkman.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
So today we wanted to talk about a guy who's had some fairly exciting and controversial ideas, Aubrey de Grey. And this is someone who has sort of dedicated the second half of his professional life to figuring out how to defeat the symptoms of aging.
You may have seen him in various mind-expanding videos on the internet. He's a scraggly-looking fellow with a gigantic beard. He looks kind of like a latter-day Rasputin.
David Stipp of Forbes called it his Rip Van Winkle beard, which I really like.
Every single article I have ever read that had anything to do with him had at least a part of a paragraph dedicated to this man's beard. And indeed, it is impressive.
His beard, it's like a tree.
It is. He's been on TED Talks. He's mm-hmm. we've got a feature on him on Curiosity Project, and it's because he has some pretty interesting ideas of how to combat the symptoms of aging. And he comes from this from a really interesting pathway, because he didn't start out as a biologist. He started out as a computer scientist, specifically focusing on artificial intelligence.
Right. And he's never actually been – well, I mean, he has studied a lot of biology, but he's studied theoretical biology.
Mm. And so he's sort of approaching this from the perspective of an engineer, which has some doctors and other people within the medical field concerned that perhaps it's an oversimplified view. But I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. We should sort of talk more about – his area of interest and what it is he's trying to accomplish. So, first of all, you could say that he's a gerontologist in a way. That's someone who studies aging. So that's the whole area of the study of aging is gerontology. And he is he formed this organization called the Strategies for Engineered Negligible Senescence.
Say that again.
SENS.
SENS.
There you go. Go with the acronym.
Negligible senescence. Yeah. And so senescence, that means
something. What does senescence mean?
All right. Well, so cells, normal healthy cells, go through a life process in three stages. First, you've got normal healthy cell division, which is mitosis. And then eventually the cells will stop dividing, and that's called senescence. After that, you have cell death, which is apoptosis. But that comes later and is debatably awesome for your body.
Right. So this idea of the negligible engineered senescence, or senescence, depending upon how it's pronounced, I honestly don't know. The idea here is that we are trying to find a way to halt that phase of an organism's life where the cells are no longer dividing in a healthy way, or they're dying off too early. Essentially, the idea is to try and preserve an organism's healthy state at the peak of its life. So, for example, the numbers that I tend to hear for a human, according to the Aubrey de Grey stuff, is between the ages of, say, 25 and 29, right in there where you are, in theory, at your healthiest. At least as far as, you know, an average person is concerned. So it's all about trying to create this solution, or actually a series of solutions, to maintain that kind of level of health indefinitely. And it may extend your life, it may not, but at any rate, what ideally what it would do is allow you to have a healthy, active life throughout your life.
Right. He said several times that that added lifespan is not the point of all of this. It's really quality of life that he's looking for.
Right. Although he's also talked about how he would love to live to 1,000 so that he could read all the books he'd want to read
and see all
the movies he wants to see.
Wouldn't some of us, many of us, a few of us?
Well, I think we've already established that I'm planning on trading in Joe's immortality for double immortality for myself. As I recall from our previous podcast.
Even more.
Right. So, yeah, I need to be twice as immortal. But DeGray lays out seven principal mechanisms of aging. Or you can also think of this as different types of damage.
This is interesting because I think most people don't think about what actually happens when we age. They don't realize that it's the cumulative effect of a series of processes.
It's several right. biological processes.
Exactly. And so any solution would not be, like I said, just one solution. It would have to be multiple solutions to meet all the requirements to cancel out these seven principles of aging.
So what is aging
at
its core?
Well, the way he breaks it down, because he's looking at aging as these various types of damage, he has the seven different types. The first three he lays out are types of cellular damage. The first is this loss of cells, the idea that you have cells that die and they aren't replicated, so they're not being replenished in any way. So you could have muscle loss, bone loss, that kind of thing. And a lot of these different types of damage that he talks about relate to specific kinds of diseases or conditions that you are probably familiar with.
So does this particular problem have anything to do with what I've heard of the Hayflick limit?
Yes, that would be the limit that was proposed by Dr. Leonard Hayflick back in 1965. And he observed that cell death process that I mentioned earlier, that apoptosis. And this is a natural process. It's really useful for, you know, for us not having webbed hands. because embryos, when sure. when you're going through development, not all parts of you wind up being you. You know, it's we lose our tails, we lose the webbing between our fingers, and so that's very useful for that. Apoptosis goes on during menstruation. It's really great for fighting off viruses and cancers. However, like Jonathan was saying, at a certain point, you're cells are dying off and they're not being replenished.
Right. So that's one thing that we would need to address. And he has he's named the various solutions, or at least the kind of overview of what the solution might be. Keeping in mind, we don't have solutions for all this. If we did, we'd already have
be
this
immortal?
Implemented. Yeah.
Right.
Or at least we'd all be healthier. But it's sort of he's named what the overall approach would have to be in order to address this issue. So in this case, he calls this part replenisens, each one having sens at the end of it, S-E-N-S, which is the acronym.
Yeah.
So that's the first one, is the loss of cells, figuring out how to make sure that cells continue to replenish.
He's proposed a stem cell therapy for that one as being kind of the leading.
Yeah, and in fact,
stem cells are just kind of magic, aren't they?
Yeah,
they're unicorns.
They're pretty much the.
They're made of unicorn giggles. That's a science fact, guys.
Okay, so you can just buy that straight from ThinkGeek. You get that canned unicorn meat. You've got. That's not the way that works.
No,
stem cells. They're like the quantum phenomena of medicine, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. These are the cells that have the potential to develop into other types of cells, and depending upon what kind of stem cells you're talking about, the variety of cells they can turn into is very wide or very narrow. Because not all stem cells are the kind where this one protocell could be anything. Some of them are. They can be any type of vascular tissue, that kind of thing. So it all depends on the type of stem cell. But anyway, yes, he does say that that is one potential way we could meet this challenge. And in fact, from what I understand, it might be one of those things that would be a requirement, because some of the other solutions he's proposed would end up affecting us in such a way that we would have to have stem cell treatment in order to combat some of the side effects we could have from treatments from the other principles. This is where it starts getting complicated, but we haven't even gotten into principle number two yet.
Okay, let's go to number two.
Thank you. Number two is that there are two different versions of this. So this is technically two and three. So number two is that you end up with too many cells because the cells don't die when they are supposed to. And that one, he suggested apoptosens. This is so hard to say because of the SENS acronym at the end. That was his solution or overview of what the solution would need to be to take care of that problem. And the other type was too many cells because these cells divide when they aren't supposed to, which
sounds like cancer.
Exactly. That's pretty much what cancer is. And so his overview of what the solution would have to be is called oncosens, which oncology, that makes sense,
Sure. So. Yeah, because cancer is actually pretty cool. I mean, not when you have it, obviously, that's terrible, but the way that cancer cells don't die is kind of terrific, and so people are doing a lot of studying into that to see if we can use that to extrapolate.
This idea that you can take something that is very harmful in one manifestation, but find a way of applying some of that in a medicinal way in order to prolong life. It's a fantastic idea if we can make it work. I mean, we've seen this in other applications as well, not just with cancer, things like viruses. We've seen medicine use viruses in order to have nanomedicine delivered to particular parts.
Yeah, if you can reprogram them, then you can get them to do what you want.
Exactly. You can code a virus shell with a certain type of protein, and theoretically it'll seek out the right kind of cells to deliver a cellular amount of medication. So you're dosing particular cells. So, we see this where we're using things that were at one point potentially hazardous or deadly in other ways to improve our lives. So that might work out, but we still have to figure out how to actually
accomplish any of that.
Well, not only that, but how do we actually stop the uncontrolled division?
Right.
How do we stop the cancer part of cancer and utilize the beneficial aspects while getting rid of the ones that are deadly? And he's thinking about mainly things like a gene therapy as an approach. And again, that's one of those approaches that some people say may oversimplify the matter, although it's really kind of hard to say right now because you can frame these approaches in such general language as for them to be they can fit any definition in a sense. You know, like if you just sit there and say someday we will be able to do this, it's kind of hard to refute that. All right, well, that's the three types of cellular damage, but then there's three types of molecular damage. One of those is damage to DNA, specifically in mitochondria. These are the cellular powerhouses. This is an energy element to the way cells live. They have their own DNA, mitochondrial DNA. And unlike the DNA that you find in a cell nucleus, which has some repair systems built up around it to help maintain that DNA's integrity, the mitochondrial DNA, they don't have that kind of support system. So they are more vulnerable to various types of mutations.
Right, and they exist in a highly oxidized environment, which makes them even more susceptible to damage than a lot of other little cellular bits.
Right, so that's another one of the ones that he's identified. And mitosens, which is probably the easiest one to pronounce, is his overview of the solution to that. Then you have two different types of molecular junk or garbage, depending upon which one you read. But in any case, it's unwanted molecules that begin to accumulate within an organism. And some accumulates inside cells, which these are byproducts of cellular processes. One example of this would be cardiovascular disease, that it can manifest in that way. The approach that that de Grey suggests is called lysosens. And then there's the molecular junk that accumulates outside a cell's walls, so in between cells. And this is created through metabolism. And de Grey points out that an example of this could be manifested in something like Alzheimer's or diabetes. And amylosens is the name of the approach that you would have to address this issue. So those are the three types of molecular damage.
Right. And there are already processes going on inside your body that are taking care of some of this junk. The lysosome within cells is the organ that kind of digests some of this junk, but it can't digest everything. And so some of the therapy that he's suggesting is adding extra enzymes in there to drive the lysosome to get rid of more stuff than it currently can.
Right. Yeah, some of these molecules that get formed turn into stuff that cells just can't process. And so it just accumulates. And that's why they call it junk. It's this idea of kind of like if you've ever lived with someone who is a hoarder, where you walk into the room and you just realize that tomorrow I will not be able to open this door. Same sort of thing. These cells get bogged down with lots of molecules that they cannot deal with, and then eventually that causes problems.
Right. Yeah. Outside of your cells, the immune system process is called phagocytosis that's supposed to take care of this, and it does to a certain extent. But
like phago from the root, like eating.
Correct.
So you got some cells that come and eat up the junk.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But and so his proposition is to kind of chemically amp up that process.
Right. And then the final principle, so we've got the three types of cellular damage, three types of molecular damage. The final principle is called cross-linking, and this has to do with tissue. So you have tissues that hold things into place, kind of give a shape, sort of a scaffolding, if you will, for various types of...
So that all your cells aren't just floating free within your body.
Right, you're not just a big blobby mass of cells. It's very important as far as I'm concerned. But they're supposed to be... In most cases, they're supposed to be elastic, right? So the idea being that they can change in shape and maintain an organism's
That's why you can push on your skin and have it bounce back.
Yeah, it's why your tendons will hold your muscles in place, but not restrict them so that you can't actually flex them. That sort of thing, or your heart muscles as well. I mean, it's important stuff. But the problem is that as you age, there are these proteins that can form cross links between a tissue's lattice-like structure, which then gives it rigidity. So something that was once elastic becomes more stiff and rigid as time goes on, and this obviously can inhibit your various organs' ability to do their jobs. So that's something else that has to be addressed as you age, and the overall process that he names in this one is called glycosens. So those are the seven principles of aging, the various symptoms of aging that he wants to try and eliminate through various means, and some of them scientists, I think, agree are more reasonable than others. Some of them, I think some scientists and doctors would say, are oversimplifications of the problem, or at least the solutions are so vague as to not be practical in the foreseeable future.
So I remember a while back he was challenging people to disprove this, wasn't he?
Yeah, he had his Methuselah project, and also there was a the magazine Technology Review, which comes from MIT. They got together and put up $10,000 each, so $20,000 total, as a challenge to anyone who could draw up an explanation that would disprove the SENS approach, saying that is there something that's been overlooked, or is there a fundamental flaw, or is there something about this approach that is simply not likely or feasible? And they received, I think they received 7 or 8 responses, but only a few of them were considered, only a few of them actually met the requirements that were set out by the challenge. And ultimately, the judges, who were impartial, came to the conclusion that no one had presented anything that would actually say, yeah, this disproves. So no one won the prize. However, it's not exactly a slam dunk win for de Grey either, because they also said that you haven't really defined this in a way that is very scientific.
Oh, right. It's not like a it's not a scientific hypothesis that you can set out to clinically disprove.
Right. So I want to read a couple of little comments that were actually not little, so a couple of significant comments that one of the judges said, is Nathan Mervhold, who said this. At issue is the conflict between the scientific process and the ambiguous status of ideas that have not yet been subjected to that process. The scientific process requires evidence through independent experimentation or observation in order to accord credibility to a hypothesis. SENS is a collection of hypotheses that have mostly not been subjected to that process and thus cannot rise to the level of being scientifically verified. However, by the same token, the ideas of SENS have not been conclusively disproved. SENS exists in a middle ground of yet-to-be-tested ideas that some people may find intriguing, but which others are free to doubt. And he goes on quite a bit more, says that SENS has many unsupported claims and is certainly not scientifically proven. He says, I personally would be surprised if de Grey is correct in the majority of his claims. However, I don't think that the people who submitted the rebuttals have provided that SENS is false. That would require more research. In some cases, SENS makes claims that run parallel to existing research while being more sensational. Future investigation into those areas will almost certainly illuminate the controversy. Except this was England, so it might have been controversy. But at any rate, it goes – others people had similar things to say. Another person, Craig Venter, said that in my view – the critics have not demonstrated that SENS is unworthy of discussion, but the proponents of SENS have not made a compelling case for it. So in other words, nobody came out looking great out of that experience.
Well, so from the little bit that I've heard Aubrey de Grey talking, I've gotten the impression that he's very concerned with keeping possibilities open. I get the impression that his main objective is to get people to think about things that they might otherwise not think about.
I would agree with that. I think that he has his concern. Well, he often says that he thinks if we really dedicate a lot of resources to looking at ways of defeating the symptoms of aging, then in the case of mice, because this is really what he's talking about right now, is just experimenting with mice and not on people yet. But that if we were to really it's an important thing to mention.
Specify,
But that he would concentrate – if we really concentrate, we might be able to crack the problem within 10 years. So if we don't really concentrate, if we take our time, it may be more like 40. And if we're really not interested in it, it might take 100. Now, personally, I think a lot of his concerns are going to be taken care of just from other disciplines that are also working on similar problems, right? I mean, you have the whole field of oncology that's working on the cancer problem. And it may be that the solution is very similar to the one that DeGray proposes, or it may be something totally different. But I think that if you're looking at it as a unified discipline, yes, it's going to be one of those things that, you know, might be a tough sell just because it sounds a little outlandish when you first think about it. Like, yeah, I want to stop, you know, to halt the process of aging, or the symptoms of aging, if you prefer. But I do think there are plenty of different disciplines out there that are working on these individual pieces, and that's going to continue. And
absolutely. And there's already, I mean, there's a bunch of examples from nature of animals that don't quite behave the way that aging says that they should.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I'd say one fact that is in DeGray's favor is that that senescence is, or that, you know, normal rate, the kind of senescence that humans experience, is not a guarantee across the entire animal kingdom.
Right.
Like, you could, well, for a while you may have seen this. There were these claims going around the internet that lobsters are immortal. Have you heard this?
Yeah. I remember hearing that phrase somewhere, and I never looked into it because I just got jealous. I also kept on imagining lobster immortals battling it out until one of them is left.
Right. Yeah. There can be only one lobster.
Yeah. So. That's another Highlander joke. I think I made one in the last podcast, too.
Yeah. We made several. No, well, it turns out that this isn't exactly true. So it's not that we don't have any evidence, as far as I can tell, just from my research, we don't have any evidence that lobsters can live forever. But we do have.
Well, we keep eating them. They're so delicious.
That's the trouble. Every time we try to study them, the scientists end up steaming
getting
them
hungry,
and getting some butter sauce.
They should just have me do it because I'm allergic to lobsters, so I'll never eat
really?
Them.
Oh, wow. So you could get a grant.
Yeah.
But no, so, okay, here's what is interesting about lobsters. So, we don't have any evidence that they would live forever if they weren't killed by, you know, some fish eating them or something like
that. Sure, or some other disease.
We do have evidence that they have much slower senescence than we see in lots of other creatures, and there, basically, it's worth a lot more research into looking at the ways that lobsters age or don't age, and seeing what actually happens. We don't know enough about that. One thing I was reading, that it's apparently just kind of difficult to track lobsters and stuff like that.
Well, they're so wily.
They can't move that fast.
I'd have to imagine that you interfere with their life processes when you remove them from the ocean and stuff like that. But
yeah.
Also, but they do, like, say they continue to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So a really old lobster, the way we grow until a certain age, I don't know, you know, in the 20s or something like that, and then we start shrinking. Well, we might grow horizontally, but
I have been.
We don't continue to get stronger.
Right.
I mean, a lobster might, and some other decapods that live in the water, they do the same thing. As they get older, they just get bigger and bigger and more powerful, and they don't lose function the way we do when we age.
Yeah.
I saw one study that suggested a link. They said, so the slow senescence of lobsters might be linked to high telomerase activity that you can detect all throughout their body tissues at any age. And telomerase, essentially, it's a
protein created by telomeres, which are those end caps to DNA strands.
Yeah.
Right, that get a little shorter every time a cell divides.
Mm-hmm.
And so once that cap goes down to nothing, that's pretty much – that's like the end for that cell.
Right. That's what triggers that cell death, supposedly.
Yeah. So,
they have an excess
high telomerase activity all throughout the body, and maybe that prevents some of that
aging effect. Sure,
but not just lobsters. Actually, there are some things that come closer to that immortality claim. Like, for example, the polyps called hydras. You heard about these?
They're
these tiny little things, and apparently they can live. As far as we know, they can seem to live forever, for all we can tell.
Indefinite lifespans.
Yeah, they just keep going. There's also the immortal jellyfish.
I've heard about that one.
Turritopsis dorni.
I'm glad that you said it, because I wasn't willing to attempt that one. It seems to reverse its life cycle back to the polyp stage and then grow again.
Yeah.
And they think that it does this through during that rejuvenation, it undergoes cellular transdifferentiation, which is what happens in stem cells.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, that's exactly right. The jellyfish, as far as we can tell, can do this indefinitely. We don't know of any point at which it has to stop and die.
Yeah, it's apparently kind of an issue. It can take over large segments of the ocean, and it can apparently grow in any ocean that it wants to, and it's immortal. So, I mean, you know, it's running around with swords and just killing everything.
I wonder if that, what you just said, has any application to the idea of humans being able to live forever.
Well, I mean, there's definitely been a lot of scientific inquiry into the matter, but it's
and bioethical inquiry.
Also bioethical.
Well, what I was referring to was the fact that you said that they can expand population wise if they're not dying off.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was kind of what our whole discussion was in our last podcast too. We had a whole section on that. And De Grey, for his pretty much doesn't acknowledge or doesn't. Acknowledge is probably the wrong word. He doesn't focus on the questions of things like population any of those other – or political matters. He's looking specifically at an engineering problem.
Yeah. I've read him make comments that are kind of like, well, like clearly people will just stop having kids and that'll be great. And I'm like, well, I'm not sure. Okay. That's
sure
one way. That's, that's one way
okay.
of looking at it.
If you want to stick up in his defense for a second, it might be worth saying that even if there could be negative implications to this, we at least want to have the option.
Right. No, his point is that he says, look, why are you – if you are sitting there saying that children are at a disadvantage or that this is harming children in some way by telling people not to have kids, he turns that around and saying, well, why are you saying that old people need to die?
Right.
So,
sure.
I mean, that's kind of his. Oh, yeah, that's the kind of way he turns that around. It's like that's ageist. You're saying that old people need to die so that we can make room for young people.
And it's also certainly true that there are a lot of biological limits that if you go back to certain points in history, I mean, people would just have to accept as this is just what life is. You know, you die. Most half of babies die before they're five or something like that. That's just
couple centuries ago, the human lifespan was only what, like 40 years?
Yeah, but and that was because
including infant mortality.
Right, it was because of infant mortality.
Sure,
that if you lived past the age of 21, there was a good chance you're going to see the age 65.
Right,
but you had to live to 21 first.
I don't know. The point I'm making is that just because something is basically the way things are doesn't mean that we'll always see it that way. I mean,
that's true.
It could be in the future people would look back and be like, oh my God, what was wrong with these people? They just accepted that aging was inevitable. I mean, what a horrible way to live.
And that's another thing that he points out. And really, ultimately, my view is that even if you were to disprove the sense approach, even if you were to maybe not disprove it, but at least say that it's unrealistic or it's too narrowly focused or the solutions that have been proposed are far more complicated than what we expect. Now, keep in mind, you know, his approach right now is looking at mice, and that even if we do figure out how to make it work for mice, we may never figure out how to make it work for people. But let's say that all of that, you know, you can just put that aside. The interesting thing to me is that if we do tackle this problem, even if we don't ultimately figure out how to completely eliminate the symptoms of aging, we will very likely learn other ways that can help us improve quality of life. It may not mean that you will be like a 25-year-old when you hit age 70, but you might have a greater resistance to certain types of diseases that otherwise you might be vulnerable to. So I think that it's a very valuable line of inquiry, no matter what.
Definitely.
Well, what do we always say around here?
Yeah, it may not work, but we'll still learn something along the way. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know we bring that point up in just about every podcast, but I really do believe that's true. I would much rather that people seriously look into this because Best case scenario, it works.
Oh, yeah.
Worst case scenario, we learn stuff.
Right.
That's not bad.
If our worst case scenario is a cure for cancer,
that's still pretty good. Yeah. Now, truly the worst case scenario is not looking into it at all and just accepting that what we've got is what we've got and that's it. But fortunately, the human history is filled with people who refused to take that position. And I suspect that will continue. I mean, I just know some people. That's all.
You know some people.
You've met a couple. One or two.
Yeah, one or two, and they tend to be.
They sound like downers to me.
No. These are the people who are like, no, I'm not accepting this. So anyway, I'm sure everyone out there knows someone like that. If you guys have suggestions for future topics that we should cover in Forward Thinking, I invite you to share that information with us, because otherwise, we're just going to have to keep on guessing until we finally cover how telepathy is going to work in the future.
Oh, right.
Yeah, well, that's probably, off a ways. I can't see it just yet.
There are seven steps to telepathy.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'll tell you about them after the show.
I think it's 20 to 40 years off.
An excellent guess there, Lauren.
That's a number. I'd print that.
All right. Anyway, the important thing is that I need you to send email or get in touch with us in some other way, because I have not developed telepathy yet. So if you want to send us an email, that address is fwthinking@discovery.com, or go to fwthinking.com. We have links there to our social media, so you can get in touch with us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Google+. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you want to hear. You can also read up on our blogs. You can watch the videos. You can listen to other episodes of the podcast there. Everything you would ever want right there. FWThinking.com.
Everything.
Absolutely. Is right there. FWThinking.com.
Free Go chocolate.
Unicorn giggles.
Look, I'm just saying everything. Stop giving more examples. All right, guys. That's it. We look forward to talking to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, Centratech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. Is getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine. And I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome to season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.